Let me put it in one phrase like this. The more you have of the world, the more the world has of you. Do you understand that principle? I have watched that principle in action. And let me tell you, this is no theory. This is simple fact. The more you have of the world, you try to get richer, you get one house, you get two houses, you get two cars, five cars. I don't know how many cars you can drive, but never mind. If you feel happy, then have all the cars you want and all the houses you can own. Maybe you can live 3 months in this one, move to the other one for 3 months, or rent that one out, get more money, more money. The more you have of the world, the more the world has of you. And no one who has that much of the world and the whole, who is so possessed by the world has any vision. There's no use for vision. It's a waste of time to talk about vision. You see why I don't want you to preach? I take this message to China, and they will just gobble this word in. Oh, my, this is marvelous. You preach for 1 hour, not enough. 2 hours, not enough. 3 hours. In fact, they won't even let you sit down for the whole day if you can stand on your feet. And that's no exaggeration. We had one thin co-worker, Pastor Joe. You know how thin he is? They wouldn't let him even have lunch. Can you believe this? Because they didn't want him to stop preaching the word of God. You wouldn't even understand that, would you? It's just incomprehensible. Nobody's that crazy. Here, a pastor preaches 20 minutes and you're looking at your watch and think, goodness, when is he going to stop? He's been preaching all day already. The next time you look, it's 30 minutes and you think, this is forever. He's never going to get off that platform. But there, Pastor Joe was not allowed. He said finally to them, he said, are we going to have lunch? And they said, no. He said, yes, if you don't want lunch, I need lunch. Because I don't have the strength to keep on preaching without eating. He has no reserves, you know, not like me. I still have reserves, but he doesn't. Materialism, the world. What is world? You know, the world in the Bible is simply a system in which Satan controls everything hiddenly. Hiddenly, that's the secret thing. In other words, he controls you without your knowing it. He uses materialism. He uses a number of other things that we'll come to. And you don't even know that you are being controlled. That's what in English is called insidious. Insidious means something is working without your knowing it. It's a good word in English to know. Insidious. It's like cancer. Cancer is insidious. You may have cancer working in your body right now, but you don't know. You haven't got a clue. By the time it's discovered, it's often a bit late. Because it works insidiously, hiddenly. That's how Satan works. He doesn't come to you in front of Guang Ming. Here is Mr. Satan. No way. You won't even see him. He doesn't exist. He doesn't want you to believe. Then he works quietly. Dreadful, isn't it? Insidious. And that's the world. The world is a system of thought, a system of government, a system of society where Satan gets you to believe that you are doing what you really want to do and which is very good for you. Oh, he's a great psychologist. Anybody who studies psychology knows that. The way to get somebody else to do something you want is to tell him how good it is for him. If you haven't done that, you can never be a CEO. You don't know how to manage. You don't know how to govern. You must make the other people, your employees, your staff, believe that whatever you want them to do, actually you want them to do, you won't tell them that, but you tell them that it's in their best interest to do it this way. And wow, they really go all out to do this for you. But of course, you wouldn't say it's for me. It's for your own benefit. It's for your good. Look at yourself and see how much is materialism a factor in your life. You can know it. How much do you earn per month? Not enough. And then you get the next raise. How much do you earn? Not enough. You know, interesting thing about materialism is we can never be satisfied. There's no limit. If you have $100,000 in the bank, you want $500,000. If you have $500,000, you want $1,000,000. You say, no, I'll be satisfied with $100,000. That's because you haven't got $100,000 yet. Wait till you have $100,000 and then you'll say, only $100,000. I mean, I've still another 50 years to live. How can I? So you need 500,000. He said, I'll be satisfied. But you are kidding yourself. Wait till you get to 500,000. And then you'll say, what? This my friend over there, he has 2 million. I'll be satisfied if I get the million. And you won't. That's how it works insidiously. You see, you don't realize you're being pushed along by this hidden force of greed. That's all that it is. But you call it security. You see, it's security. Security sounds much nicer than greed, doesn't it? It's so crass, the word greed. And me, greedy, not at all. But security, yes, I need that. The second thing that we see here is this. What does it say here? Well, it says that we need religion. You see, the world does not throw out religion. It makes use of religion. The world exploits everything, including religion. Religion is a tremendous power, and the world knows that you don't stand up against such a power. What do? You assimilate it to your own purpose. Now, take the politicians in America. You know that they're all good Christians. Every one of them. Mr. Bush is a Christian, of course, you know that. And then so is the two Johns now, John whatever. And then they are also Christians. One is a Catholic, one is a Methodist, and Mr. Bush is a Baptist, and everybody is Christian. Oh, yes. Now, I don't want to criticize them. I have no right to criticize anybody. And they are Christians. They may be very genuine Christians. I don't know. But the point is, and it's rather convenient to notice, that unless you are a Christian, your chance of garnering votes from Christians is very, very slim. In fact, I heard an interview with just two Democratic candidates, the two Johns. They said they are very sincere about their faith when being questioned by a commentator. Well, let no man question that. We have no right to criticize or condemn. But what we have to know is that Christianity is very, very powerful. Christianity, mind you, as a religious system, is very powerful in North America and in the United States in particular. They can put you in office and they can throw you out of office. That's because a majority of people are Christians in one sense or another. And you don't get their vote, you don't stand a chance. Now, what does it say here? Well, it says here that Jesus, that Satan took Jesus to the holy city and to the highest point of the temple and suggested that maybe he could display his power in another way, because turning stone into bread, nobody can see it. There's no one to witness this business. You know, it's just you did a miracle, fine. Nobody saw it. But you go there in the temple, crowded with people, and you sail down from the sky, from the highest point of the temple, called the pinnacle. And wow, that will create a stir. Now that's something. I mean, Superman will be something, you know. Superman is fake. Now they will see the real thing. They will see somebody sailing down from above. And then what happens? And then Jesus, and then Satan, notice this, he knows the Bible better than most Christians, and he says, he quotes a promise. He quotes a promise from the Bible and says, now if you do that, you see, what God has promised is he command his angels to protect you so that when you come down, you will not even so much as strike a foot, you hurt your foot on the stone. Then the glory is displayed. Have you gone to a Christian bookstore? Have you seen books about the promises of God or cards about the promises? That scares me no end. It reminds me of this Satan quoting promises. Let me tell you, please, never touch a book on promises or a box of cards on promises. Don't even look at it. Don't touch the thing. Because the promises are not for you. Unless you are totally committed to doing the will of God, then every promise is for you. But otherwise, it's not for you. But even if that promise is for you, it may not apply to you at that particular time. Now, if promises apply to anybody, it will apply to Jesus. He was the one committed to doing the will of God, and Satan is clever. You see, he knew that Jesus could use the promise because he was totally obedient. But a general promise is not necessarily applicable in a specific situation. You must first get the Lord's permission that even this promise, which is to his faithful people, applies to you in this situation. It may not. This means that every true Christian has to be in touch with God. That's the difficult part. Now, if God is not real, there's no one to be in touch with. You see that? Why am I so convinced? Because I know. I know the Lord tells me what I need to do, what I may do or may not do, for to keep in the center of his will. Because God is real, I can know his will. If he were not real, there'd be no will to know, and no one to tell me what his will is. Logical? Of course it is. I told the young people that the other day. You want to know God? Meet with him. If you don't know him, obviously you don't want to do his will. You don't really know what is. Which comes first? To know him first and then do his will, or be prepared to do his will? If you are real, I will do your will. But you must do his will because he is the creator. We can't lay down conditions for him. His condition to all of us as his creatures, not as redeemed people, as his creatures. We don't have to wait till we are Christians or regenerate. As his people, as his creatures, we are committed to do his will. First we do his will, he then reveals himself to us. If any man's will is to do the will of my Father, he will know of the teaching, whether it's from God or not. That's the way it works. That's where vision comes from, my friends. If you have that precondition to do, it's because the more you do his will, the more you realize he is real. The more you realize he is real, the more you want to do his will. There is the cycle, it gets moving. And it gets moving faster and faster. The more you do his will, the more you experience him. I've written my testimony. It's only a small fraction of my testimony. I haven't got time to get to the rest of it yet. I'm so busy with other work. But that little section in front already can tell you how I constantly, and that's only a selected number, that's not all there is. There's a selected number of things I testify to in that book. Let me say that again. The more you are committed to do his will, the more you experience him. The more you experience him, the more you're committed to do his will, and so it gets more and more intense. The vision gets sharper and clearer and stronger. But the precondition, I stress again, must be there. If you say, I am ready, O God, to do your will, just as Jesus said in Hebrews, I am come to do your will. Now, here, using religion, using the promises of God, making use of promises that don't even apply to you. Here we have a Christianity that only wants the promises, but none of the conditions. You can see what happens. This is what is corrupted Christianity. Christianity is corrupted, take it from me. And of course, Christianity doesn't like to hear me say that. That's why I'm not a popular preacher. In spite of the fact that I preached 3 years in a row at Camp Trent. Because the young people, you were all university students at the University of Trent. It's called Camp Trent because it was held at the University of Trent. And they were all young people. And young people, that is why, you see, Pastor Saul is very clever, I think. He said, the young people at the camp, and he knew. Why? Because the young people do not have much of the world, and therefore the world does not have much of them. You know, the young people, even if they come from a rich family, they often don't have much. I came from a well-to-do family. My father wouldn't even give me pocket money. Why? Because he was afraid of spoiling me. I couldn't buy a sweet off the street because I had no pocket money. You know? He said, I said, I want to buy something. He said, no, you spoil your teeth, don't you? No pocket money. Oh, I came from a very well-to-do family. But I didn't have much of the world, so the world didn't have much of me. And I realized that most young people are not like that. Even if you come from a wealthy family, you may actually personally, as a student, be very poor. And such people are more open to the gospel. The moment you start working, the moment you start making money, the moment the money comes into your bank account gets thicker, the world has more of you, and God has less of you. Now, this is not like in China, as I say, you get, and maybe as a factory worker, 400 renminbi, 400 Chinese dollars a month. All right? That's not much to go by. That's about 50 US dollars a month. Right? If you have a better job, you might get $100 US a month. And of course, if you're a high professional, you might get a bit more. And if you're in business, you'll earn even more. There are lots of millionaires in China today. That's why the window of opportunity in China is closing fast, especially in Shanghai. I'm a Shanghainese. I know that. We Shanghainese are famous in China for knowing how to make money. And so Shanghai is the most prosperous, most dynamic. It's just about overtaking Hong Kong now. You go there and you see skyscrapers everywhere, highways flying over here and there and everywhere. It's like spaghetti everywhere. The road is full of countless cars. We Shanghainese are just full of the world. That's the problem. And it's hard to find spiritual people among the Shanghainese. I tell you, I count myself thankful to the Lord that He had mercy on the likes of me. I'm glad I can criticize China, Shanghainese, because I'm Shanghainese. If I weren't, I dare not criticize Hong Kong people. Although indeed the Hong Kong people are very dear to me. Anyway, the time is racing on. Let me come to the third point about the hindrances that block out vision. We saw materialism blocks out vision. We saw a corrupted religion, a corrupted Christianity that blocks out religion. And now the third thing. The third thing is the temptation of Jesus, it says here. And the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor and said, if you will bow down to me, you bow down to me. Give me some honor. Give me some face. I give you all the kingdoms. Is he bluffing? No. The point of this is that Satan is the fundamental power behind all earthly power. But the earthly powers, of course, neither want to know it or believe it. Now, what does it mean? If we can't succeed in our earthly goals by materialism, by our own effort and our own gifts, if we can't succeed by even with the cooperation of using religion, if you're desperate enough, just give Satan some honor. And he'll give you what you want. And I've seen that frightening thing happen too. Satan is no bluff, I can tell you. We can only thank God that there is a far greater power than he, that is God himself. But foolish are the people who rather than turn to God, turn to Satan. And you know that in North America, Satanism, even in its undercover forms, is widespread. And there is spiritism, and there is New Age, and there is on and on it goes. Just give me a bit of honor. I'll give you what you want. I have the power to do it, and he does. To have the kingdoms of this world is to have power. It is to have control. It is to be able to do your will. Now, at this point, I want to tell you something which is very offensive here in the West. And as told you, I have no intention of being popular at any time. I will speak the truth, and I'm happy to hear anyone disprove me. The point is that this is the Word of God. What is the kingdom of God? Think about it. We are using an archaic word, kingdom. It should be the reign of God, the rule of God, where He rules over mankind. It has to do with his sovereignty, also archaic words. There are not too many modern words to use these days. Kingdom we don't use anymore. We think of the kingdom of Jordan or some little place where there still is a king running there who is there by popular tolerance or something. The kingdom of God means God's power reigning in the world and in your life. But what is the catchphrase in first world countries today? It is democracy. Right? Oh, that's the slogan everywhere. We want democracy. I'm sorry, my friend. I'm sorry. There is no democracy in the Bible. Shock to you? Why? Democracy comes from two Greek words. The first part means people or multitudes or crowds or whatever, and krasi means power, kratos, from the Greek power, kratos. The power of the multitudes, the power of the people. Today, to say a word against democracy is heresy. That is the power of politics today. But let me say something. There is only theocracy in the Bible. That is the power of God. Theos, God in Greek, and kratos, power. The power of God. The Bible only knows the power of God. It knows no other kind of power, and unless we set up our own power, which is what we have done. I can't preach here anymore, my friends. Maybe this is the last message I'll preach in this part of the world. I preach in an environment which is hostile to theocracy. Not in word, but in fact. The more we stress power of people, the less we stress the reality of theocracy, God's kingdom in the world. Either you choose human power and authority as the ultimate power on earth, which is what happens. Now, in the old days where the kings were there, you know, the kings were modest enough to claim that they governed by divine right, what in political science is called the divine right of kings. That means to say, they say that they are a son of God, or they have their power from heaven, or whatnot and whatnot. And they use, like the second point here, religion as a means of oppressing the people. So we are not much better off with kings, as a matter of fact. Now, if we have to choose, if I have to choose between existing systems of government, human government, excluding theocracy, the rule of God, I would choose democracy, of course, as being a more balanced system as compared to the rule of kings, generally speaking. Now, in China, those of you who know Chinese history will know that occasionally we had an excellent emperor who did a wonderful amount of good, such as even in a dynasty like Qing Dynasty, which is not very popular with most of us, it being a Manchu dynasty, Kangxi and Qianlong were extraordinary, excellent emperors who governed for the benefit of the people. But since there are very few of these, and given the fact that emperors then passed on their power to their sons, who were more and more incompetent, in the end they were totally corrupt, so the imperial system was certainly no good. So man, because he rejects God as king, is left with no means of government. He has to choose between kings or presidents, whatever. And if he doesn't do that, he's going to have something less totalitarian, like the communist system. All of them no good. And we are fixed into this choice. Why? Because mankind generally didn't want God as king. We don't want God as king. Now, Israel was a theocratic state in the beginning. God ruled Israel through his representative Moses. Moses did nothing but what God commanded him to do. But if you don't have this kind of person, obviously you cannot run a theocracy. And you know what happened. Eventually, people like to be like other nations. Other nations have kings, and they can, you know, go down there with all these wonderful attire and all this pomp and ceremony. And here was Moses, a servant of God, always humble and meek. There's no glory to show to the nations, where you can ride with chariots and march your armies there and so on. None of this is in the throne. So you have a man of God, but no pomp and glory. You have justice and truth, but none of the trappings of the world. So finally came that they didn't want theocracy anymore. They want to get rid of it. They want a king like other nations who can go around behaving like kings of other nations, and finally became as corrupt as the kings of other nations. And so that's what happened to Israel. Eventually, they got what they wanted. They got their king. They behaved like any other nation. And finally, God was pushed out. Theocracy was pushed further and further away until Israel perished as a nation. Gone. Finished. And if God had not mercy upon them and raised them out of the grave after 2,000 years, there wouldn't be an Israel left.
And do they now worship God in Israel?
No, my friend. Do they love God now as they did in the time of Moses? No, my friend. I've been to Israel many times. I know Israel as well as anybody. And those Jews that do still worship God, so to speak, are what are called the Orthodox Jews mainly, or the Reformed Jews, whichever. And that what we have is religion, again, ceremony, yishi. We have all these trappings of external religious behavior. How many are still faithful to God? There are some. Let's not say no. There are some. But they are such a tiny minority. And that is the state of the church today. We want democracy. Why? Because it's power to us, the people. Now, I'm not interested in attacking democracy as a system. As I said, there is not a better system around. So we are left with nothing if we reject theocracy, which mankind has done. It's rejected theocracy. So you only have democracy left. And now democracy becomes an ideology that people like to push out, just like Mr. Bush is doing, make all the countries in the world democratic. My friends, democracy is nothing new. It's not a recent invention. Anybody who knows a bit of history will know that the ancient Greeks were democratic states. The states of Athens, for example, was one of the first democratic states in the world. A city-state, a small state, democracy works best in a small state. The bigger it is, the more complicated the mechanism to get anything like a fair system going. But now we want everybody to be democratic, so wonderful. Now, by the way, democracy is wonderful if you have the means and the funds to live. For example, I go to the Philippines from time to time. It's a democracy in the Philippines. And it is exceedingly, exceedingly poor. And frankly, what is the use of your having the freedom to vote when you don't have enough to eat? When you are sick and there's nobody to take care of you? You don't have the money to go to hospital. You got no money to go to education. We are trying to sponsor some people to go to continue their studies because they cannot get enough money to get through their education. Recently, when I was there, I met a taxi driver, and I asked him, "You're a young man. Have you been doing all this?" He said, "No, he's a university student. He's trying to get through university, trying to make enough money to get through the college, but he couldn't because he's trying to drive his taxi, he's trying to study. In the end, he can't get through his exams because he got not enough time. He has to work enough time to earn the money to pay his college fees. By the time he has earned enough, he hasn't got enough time to study. It's a terrible situation. He's 25 years old and still trying to get through the second year of his engineering degree. So we try to work out a plan to help him out. Told him to put away his taxi, give him a loan, repayable after 5 years from graduation. Just get on with your studies and finish it. So you can see, democracy you can have. But what can you do with it when you got no money to get, and he was sick and he's nobody to no money to look for, to pay his medical expenses. Democracy is wonderful when you live in an affluent country like Canada. It's heaven on earth. Democracy, yes. Half the people don't bother to vote. They don't even want to know. Who cares who's in government? You just give me my social benefits and don't you touch that. If you touch that, I throw you out in the next election. Now, that's the point. The people do have power. They can throw you out if you don't do what you want them to do. Understand? What does that mean? If you're an American, you know that you could put Bush out of power in the next election. Well, you're only one out of a huge number of people. But maybe your vote will count. After all, you know by what little margin, 300-some votes he won in Florida. So, you do have power. There's where the problem is. What happens here is, psychologically, it means that the respect for power diminishes to the point when there's no more respect for power. Have you heard people talking to the leaders of our democratic countries? Oh, they can grill them, cross-examine them, contradict them, stop them in mid-sentence. You would not dream of treating anybody with this much disrespect.
Only their own party members respect them. The other party members call them all kinds of names. You know, no respect, you know, no respect for authority. That's what happens.
Now that means gradually we have respect for no authority because the power is in our hands. We are the people. And we transfer this mentality into our relationship with God. That is terrifying. Just 2 days ago, I happened to catch a comment when I was looking at a program on the History Channel. There was something about introducing another program, and it stuck in my throat, I can tell you, where this man said that God and Moses had a lot of respect for each other. Does that sentence bother you? Probably not, because in a democracy, you can put the leader in power, you can kick him out of power for that matter. And maybe you think you can vote God out of authority too, if you would like. You have so used to power. God and Moses, what are we talking about? We can talk of God and Moses in the same breath as having respect for each other. I tell you, those of us who have served the Lord and have known the glory of God, shrink. It just makes me sick in the stomach. Who are you talking about, my friend? I think Moses, if he heard that sentence, he would have dropped on his face. So may the Lord forgive. God and Moses have a lot of respect for each other. So you're talking about equals. And there's not even... What is man, the scripture says, that you are mindful of him, or the son of man? What is man? We have lost that concept. We grew up in democracy. We are used to power, the power of the people. That guy there, this, whoever his representative of my district is, he does what I don't like, and you send him a letter and really slam him, all right? And if he still doesn't do what you want him to do, you vote against him next time he's out of office. You are used to power. You see what I mean? We have grown up in an environment that is inimical, that is hostile to reverence or the fear of God. Fear of God doesn't exist anymore in the churches here. I see nobody fearing God. Give Jesus a clap. Jesus, what is he, an actor? What do we think he is? But they don't see anything wrong with that. It must be me. I am the crazy one around here. I have fear of God. Fear in the sense of reverence, because I know his power. I know who he is. Do these people know? Give Jesus a clap? What are we talking about? All right, maybe we put him on the level of president. Then the president comes in, give him a clap. You see, that is why I said, I don't wish to preach anymore in this part of the world. The preconditions for vision, which comes with honor and a fear for God, doesn't exist. Either you don't even believe God exists, or if you do, well, he needs your vote as much as President Bush or President anybody else does. I mean, you don't give him a vote, God is out of the picture. He needs you. You are the important person to give him some face, give him some status. He can stay in office thanks to you. Isn't that right? Am I wrong? Such a God is not worth believing in. A God that stands on the level with Moses. This God created heaven and earth. Do we know what the universe is like? Do we even have a clue? Do we know what the area of particle physics is like? Do we have a clue? I read up on these things. I read up carefully on these things because it magnifies my wonder. My God, it's amazing. But today, they use the name of God as swear words, as just a, you know, just a byword. Jesus Christ, they use words like this. In this kind of atmosphere, I don't preach. I don't preach here. I remember I was on the ship coming over from Asia, and they was on the ship because I was on a freighter, and there were only 8 or 9 passengers on the freighter, and we were all treated as first class. People, because and though we paid less than the passengers, but because it takes longer on the freighter, so
You're given first-class accommodation and first-class treatment and food, and just you're stuck with 8 or 9 people together. And I had there on the ship, there was this Austrian doctor. He was very well-fed indeed, you know. But he had this nasty habit of always using Jesus' name as a swear word, as a byword. And he would keep saying, Jesus. Now, I was only in my early 20s, okay, and he was, looked to me like 50s or 60s, I don't know what, and he was a big doctor, and I was small nobody, all right? But I had walked with Jesus a good number of years in China, and I was not about to have anybody taking my Lord's name in vain every 2 minutes. He couldn't open his mouth without using Jesus as a swear word. One day I said to him, after a day or two of this, I could stand it no longer. And I said, the doctor, whatever his name was, I don't remember anymore. I said, maybe Jesus means absolutely nothing to you, as is obvious. But please bear in mind that he means an awful lot to me. So if you could somehow manage to stop using Jesus as a swear word or as a byword, I would deeply appreciate that. Oh, he said, I'm sorry. He was a very worldly, very carnal kind of person. And then, of course, the next day he started, and immediately Jesus came out of his mouth again. He says, sorry, sorry, sorry. And this went on for several days. And he's like, sorry, sorry. We were on the ship together for 2 months. Can you imagine? One day I was standing on the flag bridge, the bridge that's on the highest part of the ship, because I like to stand there with the wind blowing in my face and looking out over the ocean, plowing through endless waters. And he came up beside me suddenly and he said, you really believe in Jesus, don't you? I said, certainly I do. He's really, I've experienced him all. He said, amazing, you're amazing. He said, there are two things amazing about you. I said, well, even two? He said, yes. One is that you can speak and read and write Chinese. I said, yeah. He thought that anyone can read Chinese must be a genius. You don't know how anyone can read Chinese. Just unbelievable. And he said, the other thing is that you believe in God. It's really incredible. I said, well, I hope that you too will have a chance, maybe not to read Chinese, but at least to know God. And before the ship landed, after 2 months, he very happily, he wanted to take a gospel from me, John's gospel. And he said, would you put your name and address in there? I have never been afraid to stand up for my Lord. It doesn't matter. I didn't know how he would react. He could have reacted very hostile to me after, you know, this shrimp, this peanut here, you know. I mean, he's telling me what I can say, I cannot say. You know, we're in democracy here. Have everybody got the right to say what you like? But the Lord did the work. I must close. The time is gone. So I hope now that you can see why I said that we cannot have vision. We cannot have vision. Because the precondition doesn't exist. The world has gotten into us so subtly, so insidiously, that we are not even aware of it. Even as Christians, we are not aware of it. Therefore, I don't blame you. You're not aware of what's going on. Just like a cancer working, you don't even know it's there. Our ideals, the ideals that have shaped our thinking since our youth in our democracy, where we exercise our power, are the ideals of materialism, of comfort and ease. Let me just close with this. When I came out of China, in suffering and poverty, first European country that I stayed for a time in is where? In Switzerland. Because my mother was undergoing treatment for tuberculosis, severe tuberculosis that she got in China. And the best treatment at the time, available at the time, was in Switzerland, in the mountains, in the sanatorium. She had one lung removed. Switzerland, of course, is a democracy. A democracy of the truest kind. Much more true than the United States or anything. What do I mean by that? No major decision can be made in Switzerland except by referendum. Not by vote, but mind you, by referendum. That's the difference. What is the difference? Well, A democracy is not a true democracy. For example, if President Bush wants to go to war with Iraq, there's nothing the American people can do about it because he's commander-in-chief. He takes the nation into war, that's it. And the same, that's democracy. Even though the majority of people may be opposed, as was the case in Spain, as you know, the majority, the vast majority, opposed the war in Spain being involved in Iraq. No difference. A democratically elected government takes the nation into war anyway. Of course, they lost the next election, as you know, those who were in power, who took the nation into war. But too late. They were already in war, and they had the bombings in Madrid, and nearly 200 people were killed. You know the whole story. A democratic state knowingly acts against the will of the people because the Constitution allows them to do so. Same thing happened, of course, in Italy. The same thing in other European countries. The people don't want to go to war. The government committed them to war anyway. Democratically elected government. And let it never be forgotten that the worst tyranny, the worst evil of dictatorship was voted into power by a democracy. You remember who? You remember who? Hitler. Hitler was democratically elected. It was a democracy that brought the Nazis to power, which shows how vulnerable a democracy is. And then the disaster of millions. Russia alone lost 20 million people dead. Maybe the whole of Europe, 40 million dead. Because a democracy voted this guy into power. And nobody can deny that. That's historical fact. That's what democracy can do. In Switzerland, you can't do that. Because you cannot take the people into any decision of a major kind if the people object. Now, as I said, it works in a small country. Switzerland is a small country, maybe 6 million people. And so every issue can be voted on and voted on quickly. The people decide. If it's wrong, they bear the consequences. But they are not made to bear the consequences of the mistakes of a government voted by them into power and dragged them into something they didn't want to do, as in the case of Spain, I've mentioned already. Today, of course, Britain is largely opposed to the war in Iraq, as you know. But they were taken in by a democratically elected. That's not true democracy, where you can act in major decisions against the will of the majority. But Switzerland. And I went there to Switzerland. And I saw what is a true democracy. Switzerland is a wonderful country, of course. And I said, if that is democracy, if you want to push out theocracy, then this is the best you'll ever have. That's the best. You'll never have to accept a decision that you didn't want and forced upon you by a government that, yes, you elected, but that bunch of people decided for political reasons to act in another way. No, they couldn't do that in Switzerland. So I lived in a pretty... There's another heaven on earth. Switzerland's another heaven on earth. On top of that, I saw in the life of my uncle the best the world can offer. You know, my uncle, he was a very successful sales manager. And at the age of 50, he retired as a very rich man. He felt he knew where to cut off. He said, okay, I've made enough money to last me a couple of lifetimes. I've quit at this point when I'm still young and strong. I can still enjoy my life. He was very healthy and fit. He's now 90 years old and still very healthy and fit. So the last 40 years, he's been enjoying his life. Wouldn't you like that? Huh? You have all the money you can want. You can buy whatever you want, go anywhere you want, do anything you like because you have the health to do it, the money to do it. Oh, wonderful life. I visited him once and he said to me, Eric, he said, because I said, I'm going back to town. He said, why don't you take my BMW into town? BMW? I have only 20-some, you know. And his is the top type of BMW. I believe it's the 7 series. As you know, BMW, there's a 3 series, the smaller one, 5 series, mid-size, 7 series, top of the line, or something like that, I mean. He said, take my BMW into town. I said, no. If anything happens to your BMW, I'm all my lifetime, I can't afford to pay that bike back again. He said, don't be silly, just go and take a drive, you know. So I got into this big BMW, and there I was driving this thing. a 20-year-old, I think I was 25 or something at the time, driving this BMW into town. Can imagine me arriving and open the door. Even in a rich country like Switzerland, they are not used to seeing some 20-year-old coming out of a first-class BMW, you know. Of course, that was not his only car, but he wanted to give me a feel of what the taste of the world is like, you know. And then he can really get on the hook. You know, here was this guy wanting to be a preacher. Now, you just let him sit in a BMW, then he wouldn't want to be a preacher anymore. He's going to see how he can earn his own BMW in due time. You know, he's very smart. You know? I don't think he was any evil intention, not at all. He was a very nice man. And he had this big, beautiful house, two beautiful collie dogs, and all this, with a fantastic view out there and so on. This is the world, my friend. This is the world. Well, I thank God that even in this temptation, not intended, I suppose, as a temptation by him, I said, fine, I've driven the BMW once, and that will do for the rest of my life. Of course, I've never been in a BMW 3 Series, 5 Series, or any other series since that time. But that was the picture. There in a free society like Switzerland, living it up.